Hi, HR Nation, it's Chris Rainey. Welcome to HR Leaders, the show where we interview today's most successful and innovative HR practitioners 5 days a week. Today, we're joined by Brady Powell, Director of HR Services at NASA. Brady, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you, Chris. Doing great. Excited to be here.
You're not as excited as me. The fact that I have the HR leader of NASA on the show, I feel like I've made it in life now, really. I'm a massive, massive geek, and I'm so excited to have you on the show and to get an insight to some of the minds that you've had conversations with as well. So before we jump in, Brady, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself personally and your journey to where we are today.
Sure. I actually got a master's in HR management from Texas A&M University. Started as a very junior HR consultant here at the Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas. Grew up in that organization, ended up being the executive level HR director for about 3 years, and then moved into my current position, which is, as you mentioned, director of HR services at NASA, which oversees all 10 of our field centers that span across the U.S., NASA is an exciting place to be. We're now seventh year in a row named the best place to work in the U.S. government. And we like to learn from industry. We don't like to compare ourselves to government organizations. We like to stay kind of on the leading trends with industry. So I'm excited to be here. I've learned a lot from your other podcasts, other guests as well. So I appreciate the show that you put on.
Amazing. And I appreciate the kind words as well. And just out of curiosity, was it always the plan to work, just based on where you grew up, was it like, I'm working at NASA?
I was a native Texan. Actually found out about NASA in grad school. I think a lot of engineers and scientists have that dream, but a lot of administrative professionals and support professionals, you don't tend to consider NASA as
of course, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we kind of ran into them through the cooperative education program at Texas A&M and ended up here. I figured I'd work here for a couple of years and then move on and do something different. But like a lot of folks at NASA, once they come, they don't leave. I have been here about 23 years.
Yeah. Wow.
So and that's a little above the average tenure. Average tenure at NASA is about 17 years.
Why do you think that is?
I think the mission, people really get inspired by the mission and the work we do. Some folks may or may not realize that are on the line. We were just in a shutdown here in the U.S., and 95% of NASA employees did not work for 5 weeks. But even after that, we're not seeing people leave. People really want to be part of the NASA mission and explore. And I think that just inspires folks. And then you're around people who want to be at work and who are very engaged. And it's a great place to learn and grow.
It's funny how people always talk about their mission statement, their culture. You literally have a mission.
Yes, absolutely.
You have missions. Well, how has working at NASA changed you personally over those years?
Watching leaders over the years, watching different leadership styles has definitely been helpful. Seeing what works to really engage and motivate, what doesn't work. So over my career, I've seen an evolution moving from kind of more of the military hierarchical style of leadership into today we're much more of a team-based and coaching and servant leadership approach. So it's been interesting watching that evolution and watching the differences in engagement with the team and with the workforce.
Yeah, because you would, from an outsider looking in, you would assume that type of leadership style. When you think of NASA, you think of sort of military style leadership. Yeah. Maybe all of us have watched way too many movies, probably, from our point of view, to think that way. But to think that it actually is at one point was, you know, that style, which makes sense, obviously, being a government, backed organization as well, to where you are now, which is fantastic. And I suppose as an organization which innovation is built in your DNA, you have to look outside to industry, don't you? And not just stick inside. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to innovate and stay relevant, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a huge emphasis here is to continue to seek and understand different perspectives, learn from different perspectives, so we can continue to innovate, as you mentioned. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's huge for us.
Has the competition from the likes of, you know, SpaceX, for example, actually increased the innovation within NASA?
SpaceX and Blue Origin and some of the other upstarts receive some funding from NASA. So right now, SpaceX gets funding to develop they're developing spacecraft to get up and down to the space station. Mm-hmm. And they're making great progress, and they're doing new things and doing things differently, and that is challenging kind of the bureaucracy of NASA.
Yes, that's what I mean. Yeah,
yeah. To get more innovative, to enable those companies to do things differently, do things better, and hopefully cheaper. There is tension between the lessons we've learned in the past through accidents where we've lost astronaut lives. And, you know, these companies haven't had those kinds of experiences. So there's a natural tension of, you know, how much safety precautions do you need to build in versus, you know, hey, let's get things done quickly and move more quickly. So it's an interesting dynamic to watch. But yes, we need SpaceX to be successful. We need Blue Origin.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To be successful if we're going to go deeper into space.
Yeah, and that's what I love about it, because, you know, despite there's that competition, there's that common cause together that you're helping each other by exposing it more. And now it's come back to the, you know, space exploration has come back more to the forefront, hasn't it, over the last few years, as it kind of for a while kind of died down. And then now with the emergence of these new organizations, it's kind of, by the way, I watch the launches every time on YouTube. You know, I watch the live streams on YouTube. I'm absolutely fascinated every time there's a new launch coming up. And I'm like, and when I go on there, I'm like, how is there only like 14,000 people watching this? Like, there should be millions of people watching this rocket launch right now. You know, but the excitement is slowly building back, right? And I feel like you need that obviously for the backing that's required. You kind of need people to get behind it.
Some of that is a natural evolution of where NASA is. You know, when we retired the space shuttle in 2011, that meant no launches from U.S. soil with astronauts until SpaceX or Boeing build their spacecraft. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to launch later this year their spacecraft to get crew aboard the space station. So, you know, hopefully they can make that happen and we can get back to flying from here. We've had to get our crew up and down to the space station using the Russian Soyuz spacecraft, which has been very helpful and very reliable. And it's been great to have a partnership with the Russians. That's probably something that people don't often hear about.
The only good partnership that's happening.
given the tensions that have existed in a lot of the media reports between US and Russia, the space cooperation tends to be very strong and has been key to the success of the International Space Station program. Mm-hmm. We've been flying humans in space for over 20 years now with the Russians aboard the space station. And that's been a huge testament to that cooperation.
Just from a talent point of view, this is where I'm so excited to speak to you. You know, the type of people that you're interviewing and that you're speaking to and is just and supporting, you know, as a HR function, just kind of just blows my mind a little bit. I'm just wondering, with this emergence of these new startups and technology, has that changed the different type of talent you're looking for now? To bring into the organization, it must be a real challenge to compete for this very small niche sort of pool of talent that exists. Of course, you're NASA, so you've got the name right. But still, how do you compete with the privately funded organizations who probably just have unlimited deep pockets versus a publicly funded organization?
Yeah, so we're one of the things that we're trying to work even more now is partnerships and exchanges with other organizations. So right now there's not a lot of flexibility in our system to enable those exchanges with industry, but we're working with Congress and with our leaders to try to enable more of that flexibility. Because what we see is we're able to attract a lot of young talent right out of school. And then we have a talented base in our contractor workforce. So NASA is heavily contractors. So Boeing, Lockheed Martin are the big ones. And then you have a lot of other smaller companies too. And so we tend to pull talent out of our contractor base as well when they get a little more experienced. And from an HR perspective, that's a great, great way to hire. You're able to see the talent be differentiated, and then you know, pull folks over at mid-career, you know, 15 years or so, you're able to pull them in. So that tends to be our strategy. As we look forward, we're looking to try to build more mobility with these industry exchanges. We want NASA employees to go get experience with SpaceX or Lockheed Martin, and then come back and bring that experience back and build a revolving door.
Do you think, like, unlike many other organizations, that people you're working with are more inspired by the why as opposed to the salary?
Oh, definitely. You're not going to come to NASA for
a paycheck. Yeah, that's what I mean, right?
You get paid well to make a good living, but if you're inspired by money, you probably are gonna search elsewhere. So yeah, it's definitely the why and the mission that NASA has that really brings talent in and then keeps talent here.
Well, I know one of the reasons that you came on the show today was to talk about NASA's journey in sort of HR consulting, right? And moving from decentralized HR function across 10 different locations in the US to a functionally aligned model, right? Because you've got many locations that have never used a consulting model. Is that right? Could you expand more on that?
Here in Houston, we've used the consulting model for 50 plus years, but each NASA field location has been managed differently and is basically run independently. So the role that I moved into is now overseeing all the services and all the operations across NASA, and we're trying to push that consulting model across the board. So we have some locations where we have highly capable staff who have done more of your kind of transactional work, mm-hmm. Received work, and effectively kind of processed actions and brought people on board and that sort of thing. And now we're trying to transition into this consulting model that has worked here locally in Houston. You know, that's a challenge because we're looking at about a 20% budget reduction. We're not able to do layoffs, so we've got to make do with existing staff and transition a lot of folks who've done that transactional work into consultants, which is a big hurdle for us.
No, of course. And just for everyone listening, just to clarify, when you say consultant, you're referring to like business partners, right? Just for yes. everyone.
So like, yes. And actually we're using the term HR business partners.
Okay. Because you know, some people, they say that they think consulting, that they may not realize that you're referring to HR business partners, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Fantastic. And just to clarify, you mentioned that you can't lay people off. That's mm-hmm. true, right? For people that aren't aware of why that is, could you just let them know? Because I know why, but I just want to make sure they know why.
Yeah, it's a strange situation where a lot of times when NASA is funded by our Congress, Congress will put stipulations in there that NASA cannot run a reduction in force. So, you know, at this point, we are barred from doing that by Congress that gives us our funding and our money. And typically that's done in cases where you've got congressional representatives that are concerned about losing jobs in their particular district. So we were able to make those business decisions, that might be a very real fear. So that prohibition is put in there, and then we've got to kind of work around that and say, okay, we've got to work with our existing talent and figure out how to, you know, how to transform.
So how do you then deal with sort of low performance if you have them then?
Yeah, we still have to manage those through our performance management process. And there are ways, even though you can't do layoffs or reductions in force, mm-hmm. You know, you can take care of performance issues and manage people out of the organization where that needs to happen. We have very little of that, I would say, across our human capital community, across our HR community. The bigger challenge is the skills mismatch. As we try to go through this transformation, the kinds of things staff has been very successful at doing in the past is changing, and we're asking them to do kind of a new set of responsibilities. So that will be more challenging for us to manage going forward. And what's your balance of patience, you know, with staff as they work through those changes, pushing forward on the change?
What
This episode of the HR Leaders Podcast was brought to you by our friends at Achievers. Two-thirds of employees have one foot out the door in 2024, and the top reason to job hunt? Better compensation. But money isn't everything. The Achievers 2024 Engagement and Retention Report reveals that employees crave emotional salary too. What does emotional salary mean? And what are the ways to increase emotional salary to engage and retain top talent? Learn more about motivating your employees beyond just pay by visiting achievers.com/HR leaders. Again, that's achievers.com/HR leaders. Let's get back to the episode.
That goes back to what you're talking about with the HR transformation you're going through right now, for going from transactional to business partners and retraining those individuals. So when you were first going, you know, from centralized to decentralized, right? What were the first steps that you took to start this process?
Yeah, so we kind of came together as a team. The HR directors of each of those locations came together. It was about a team of 12 of us, and we looked at, structurally, what do we want to look like? What are our goals and outcomes from a customer perspective? And we kind of designed some changes that we thought would be needed going forward, and really outlined that HR business partner role. We leveraged a lot of industry resources, benchmarking resources that we had to really help define that role and come to a common definition around it. Because a couple of the centers had the internal consulting model, but it looked a little bit differently.
Everyone has their own version.
Everyone had their own version. So we needed to figure out, hey, where do we need commonality? Where are we okay with local variation? Because each of our 10 field centers also has different missions and different cultures. So how are we stewarding those cultures locally and enabling enough variation to support the local culture variation while having a consistent model? So we worked as a team to try to strike that balance.
That's a very interesting one, because as you mentioned, where you are is more operational and mm-hmm. where the other ones is more technical. And naturally, yep. you're going to have completely different cultures, especially if you look at operations versus technical, right? How did you come up with a dynamic that would suit both cultures? Or do you kind of let those cultures still be independent because they're in different locations?
Yeah, there has been a lot of discussion over the years about, can or should NASA drive to kind of an agency culture? And, we've made the decision over the years that yes, we're all part of NASA, but there is room for that local variation. So
yeah.
One of the key decisions that we made in our transformation was to retain the local HR director role and the local variation as well. So as we move through this, we're continuing to strike that balance. Where do we need commonality? Where do we need opportunity for customization?
I'm really happy that you guys didn't, and you understood the importance of having someone there that represents that team and that culture as well, which is fantastic.
You know, having served in that role, I think was huge from my perspective in trying to influence that, because I saw the importance of, frankly, that role is our senior HR business partner role to the local center directors. Mm-hmm. And it's hugely important. Our center directors are part of the agency leadership team, and having that local connection, someone they could kind of look in the eye and build a partnership with, you really can't replace that.
What about the systems? Were you guys operating at the time in the same, all in the same systems? Was that knowledge flow there, or did you have to change the way that the actual systems and processes and that you use?
Yeah, there's actually a mix of that. So a number of years ago, we went to a common platform for personnel actions, for our payroll. Mm-hmm. But field centers, again, in our decentralized operation, some of them had built up specific systems around specific needs. And that's the process we're going through now.
The hardest thing.
it is one of the hardest things, and you've got to get more directive about that, and about reducing the duplicative costs.
Yeah.
And from a NASA perspective, heavily attacked. NASA is the most attacked from a cybersecurity.
I was going to say that, by the way. That must make it an absolute nightmare. And normally it's a nightmare. Most government organizations have crazy systems hashed together in most instances anyway. They're normally the biggest culprits of doing stuff like that. And you realize that we're spending the same, spending money 10 times when we could just have one seamless platform well. But I can only imagine the amount of cyber threat that faces the organization as well.
Other countries, other organizations that want NASA technology. And so trying to get in however they can. So that's another aspect of when we have homegrown HR systems, they tend to pose risks. And so that's something that we've had to work through as well.
So what did you put in place to help transition those staff from transactional staff to HR business partners? What did that training look like? What did that process of sitting down with them, how did that work?
So a couple of different things. We had the local organizations, the HR directors and their leadership teams worked with each individual to figure out, what is their right place in the organization. And it was a balance of individual interest and organization need. Mm-hmm. And trying to pull those things together to figure out where is the right long-term fit for the individual. For the HR business partner, we actually put together a team of leaders from across our HR organization, across the agency, to come together with what is that common definition, what kind of training and development do we need. And we actually leveraged Society for HR Management, had a good couple of different two-day programs where they would come in and define the role, kind of show what it looks like, and actually do some role play on how to have consulting conversations with your customer. And then we had another similar training around consulting as well that we brought in. We're still very early in the stages, so I can't tell you the results from that, but I do know folks have started down that path at least.
What was the initial feedback and reaction? Obviously, we know for any change, there's your early adopters, the people in, who are in the middle, and then the people that are like, no, this isn't for us, right? It's never going to fit everyone. So I'm wondering, what was the initial reaction when you kind of announced this to those teams and those leaders in those teams? Just out of interest.
Yeah, there's a little more context that would be helpful. We NASA had been talking about moving to kind of a functional centralized model probably for about 3 years. And then the decision was finally made a little more than a year ago. And so it was interesting to see the reaction of the staff, because a lot of them were at the place of, let's just get on with it. They were tired of talking about it.
3 years, yeah.
So I think we had more, people who were ready to go and ready to move forward than we might have been 3 years ago. I think there might have been a little bit more resistance. But I think because it had been talked about so long, and probably too long from an organization perspective, we should have probably moved a little bit sooner than we did. But we've had a lot of buy-in. Now, at the same time, we did offer opportunities for folks to take early retirement if they wanted to. We actually had a few retirement incentives, and we saw some folks go ahead and choose that that did not want to make the move in the transformation. So that that freed up some ability for us to go look at how we addressed our skill mix.
Yeah. Do you sometimes get frustrated as a HR leader working in a publicly controlled, funded organization that you can't innovate quickly and move as fast as you'd like?
Yes, it does. And that is something we've been working a lot to really define what kind of requests do we need to make for legislative flexibilities or other flexibilities to our HR system. So, my boss, who's the Chief Human Capital Officer of NASA, is pushing for a lot of those flexibilities. And I would say we've done more of those kinds of requests in the last year or so through this transformation than I can recall previously in my career.
Yeah, because I think that's so important, isn't it? Especially for you guys to in this day and age, of disruption and staying ahead and moving quickly is critical. It's so important, especially when you guys are the HR, you're at the forefront of the talent behind what makes NASA.
Yes. So
if you guys can't move quickly and support them, then, you know, that's directly going to impact the organization as well, hugely. Yeah. And I think people need to be aware of that, or the powers that be, let's say, of the impact that those sort of archaic processes that have been put in place. They're obviously there for a reason, for precaution. I completely understand that. But also that slowing down innovation and the progress of you guys bringing in incredible talent and developing them in the business.
Yeah, we have, for instance, we have a job classification system and a pay system that was designed in the 1940s.
So I'm not surprised. I wish I was.
Grade and step and seniority-based system. And we do as much as we can to be creative within that, but there's limited flexibility there. And, you know, we're making the arguments that, gosh, that was designed for a day and age when you had people working in typing pools on typewriters, not doing the kind of knowledge work that we're trying to do at NASA.
Yeah, so that always blows my mind when I speak to organizations like yours who are so innovative in one area of the organization, and you've got these incredible like minds, and then you look at the systems and tools and processes and frameworks to exist, and it's ancient. And yes, it's like, it's such a contrast, right? Would you agree as well?
Oh, yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah. It's so just out of curiosity, I'm fascinated to understand the recruitment process for the type of talent, because of course you're going to have to do some real heavy screening of talent. Could you kind of run me through what it looks like?
Fortunately, as you mentioned earlier, Chris, the brand is still strong. So we still see in the U.S. among engineering students, for instance, NASA still ranks at the top as far as a place people want to go. Engineering students. So we have a broad range of talent that is still applying in our direction. We go through a multi-phase process where we look at the applications we receive. We usually have a rigorous interviewing process where even for student positions, we're usually involving four or more people at multiple times, where we can see students at different times and places, try to get a diverse panel from a variety of perspectives, you know, different disciplines, different organizations, and we want consensus that this is the right person for NASA. And so going through those processes tends to get us top talent in the end. When we go through our selection processes and they make it aboard NASA, we have very few cases where we've got to remove someone within their first year, which from a government employer perspective is
critical.
Usually the easiest time. And it's a critical decision point, because once you get beyond that 1 year probationary period, it becomes very challenging to actually remove a person. You got to go through a lot more process.
Is that standard 1 year probation period for all employees? Ah, interesting. And how are you managing that performance management process at the moment? Do you have a system in place for that as well, or is that still on the same old system?
Right now, our performance management system is a 5-scale rating system. You get a performance plan at the beginning of the year and kind of work towards the expectations that are set between the supervisor and the employee, and then goal of the year evaluation, end of year discussion tends to be a process that frustrates everyone involved. So that's another case where we're looking for flexibility and looking to do things a little bit differently. But that's another one where our system ties our hands a little bit as far as what we can do.
Yeah. It goes back to our point earlier, but that's also, I suppose, what makes it exciting for you is you have so much room for improvement, right?
Yes.
It's so exciting for you and your chief human capital officer. I think you got it.
Yes.
There's so much room for opportunity, even for me, and not, I'm not a HR professional, but just having this conversation with you, there's so many exciting things that you guys can be doing for your people and for your organization, right? It's just these barriers, these sort of traditional processes that are just there, you kind of got to break through, right? So it's quite fascinating, honestly, to see that, because many people that, you know, are global brands that we work with and are leaders that, you know, for them to be listening to you right now, I think they're probably quite shocked.
Right.
You know, when they think of NASA and they think of, you know, who you guys are, that, that HR is that far behind the curve, let's say. Hope you don't mind me saying that, by the way.
No, I think that's very fair. I think we say that. I mean, that's part of our argument for more flexibilities, is that our systems and processes to a large extent are, again, 1940s based systems that don't work well for our team. Now, at the same time, our HR team has done an amazing job to work within those constraints to get the talent that we need.
You have to be amazing to do that within those constraints. You have to be incredible leaders to be able to achieve those results. So hats off to you guys. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So it's not easy, but you know, we figure out a way. So if we can ever get some of those constraints lifted, I think we can do even more amazing things.
Well, again, with that sense of purpose and that why that you guys have, there couldn't be more of a powerful one, let's be honest, to make it happen. And I'm assuming that was part of the reason why you've done this big move now from the decentralized to centralized. That's a big step in the right direction for you guys.
Yeah, and really the driver behind that is as you look forward at NASA's budgets, you know, NASA was going to get pretty stable, pretty flat budgets. And a lot of our work done for our mission is done by our contractors. So Boeing, Lockheed Martin, SpaceX, like I mentioned before. And as their costs escalate in the out years, your buying power shrinks. So what can NASA do institutionally to reduce cost burden? And so they look to, hey, we can streamline and do our support functions a little bit more efficiently, hopefully increasing buying power for the mission. And that's that's really what drove the decision.
Before we wrap up, I'd love to give your idea is, so, you know, what in your mind, what does the future kind of look like for NASA? Obviously it's been massive, huge changes, obviously, to where NASA used to be to where it is now, right, over the years. So I'm just excited to get your perspective on that. You're on the front line, you're seeing, you know, the talent coming in, privy to some projects I'm sure we can't know about, but what are your thoughts, and where do you see the future of NASA, and what does that look like?
Well, ultimately where NASA wants to be is, I think was depicted very well in the movie The Martian. Mm-hmm. You know, we have for years talked about wanting to put a person on Mars, and I'm encouraged by the steps I see us taking to get there. Right now, the focus is on going forward to the moon, and then, you know, learning from that experience, both from a rocket and spacecraft perspective, to go deeper into space and ultimately reach Mars. There are a lot of technical challenges to resolve before that. We don't know specifically things about effects of radiation on the body. You know, we've seen astronauts in space for a year-long mission, and we've learned a lot about health impacts, bone density loss. There's changes to eyesight as well. A trip to Mars is roughly a 3-year trip, about a year getting there, about a year getting back, and being there about a year. So, you know, what are the effects on the human body around that? And we've got to continue to study that more. A lot of that research is happening aboard the space station today, but that's, you know, my hope is that during my lifetime, we'll actually get to witness that.
Wow. That is something, again, you know, we always talk to people on the show about a reason to get up in the morning and sense of purpose. It's just like, it's amazing. Right. And I'm enviable of you guys, of what you guys get to do on a daily basis. And there's no surprise you've spent your entire career in your organization, despite the annoying processes.
Right. So you can live through those irritants. Yes.
Yeah, you can forget about those. It's all right. Well, look, before we wrap up, we're going to jump into the quick fire round already. I'm going to ask you 5 questions, right? You probably know what's coming. If they're longer than 30 seconds to give us some amazing answers. Are you ready?
Ready.
What was the number one thing that was holding you back from becoming a senior HR leader?
Probably whether I can do it or not.
Yeah, confidence, right, in yourself.
Confidence, yeah.
I think everyone can relate to that one. What's the best piece of business advice you've ever received?
You know, demonstrate excellence every day.
I'm not going to say one book, because you love books. So what's some books that you'd recommend to our audience and why?
Big fan of John Maxwell. His Leadership Gold is really good. From an HR perspective, I'm a big fan of Dave Ulrich. A little bit older book, but HR Champions was foundational for us here in Houston.
Could you share some internet resources you use personally to stay up to date with current events or stay productive?
Yeah, I subscribe to the HR Executive magazine, which is very helpful. I highly recommend your podcasts.
Oh, thanks.
I've appreciated those. Human Capital Institute is one. Society for HR Management is one. We also use the Corporate Executive Board for a lot of benchmarking resources as well.
Fantastic. And then lastly, you know, what's one thing about your business that you're most excited about, or your organization? I don't know how to describe it.
I think right now, most excited about launching astronauts from U.S. soil. Hopefully SpaceX can get that going pretty soon this year.
Yeah, it's been a while. How long has it been since the last one?
2011 was the space shuttle launch. So we're on close to 8 years now.
Well, before we wrap up and leave, Brady, if there's one piece of advice you can give to other sort of HR leaders that are on, developing on their journey, what would that be? And also, what's the best way for them to connect with you if they have any questions or want to reach out to you personally?
Yeah, Chris, I would offer, you know, keep learning from a variety of different perspectives. There are a lot of opportunities for HR professionals to learn today and to stay up with the latest trends, stay up with, you know, what's the way to be most effective as an HR professional. And then me personally, I'm always glad to entertain conversations with folks and share ideas. I can be found on LinkedIn, Brady Pyle. I'm also on Twitter, at Brady Pyle as well.
Amazing. And also we'll check out your blog as well.
Sure.
So guys, as always, head over to hrleaders.com. You'll find all the show notes for an episode, links to all of the resources that Brady's mentioned will be linked there for you. So it'll be very easy for you. Thank you again for taking the time out to join us. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Sounds great. Thank you, Chris.